Welcome to Equestrian Movement's First Do No Harm podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boniface, co-founder of Equestrian Movement with Sarah Gallagher. We work with horse riders who want to build a stronger bond and a deeper connection with their horses. In our First Do No Harm podcast, we discuss with other industry professionals how to work with horses to firstly do no harm and secondly support their mental, emotional and physical well-being throughout the training process, so that we have horses that enjoy learning and ask to be ridden. Each episode, we discuss the different influences our training can have and how we can improve our horses' overall athleticism, soundness of mind and body, and emotional fortitude, while strengthening and deepening our relationship with our horses. Each week, I will endeavour to bring to you a new episode on horse riding, training, handling and husbandry, or an interview with other industry professionals to help you address where and why you might get stuck in creating the beautiful union of dancing souls that is the equestrian sport. Are you ready to kick off today's show? Let's get started. Thanks for joining us for the second episode of our conversation with Melissa from Melissa Jean PT. I absolutely adore all of the work that she's doing with the horses and the people that she's working with. If you want to learn more, jump on the link in the show notes and check out the work that she's doing. She has a beautiful program that she runs called Finding Peace in the Paddock. Check out her website to see if she runs it close to you. Without further ado, let's kick off episode two. Yeah, let's talk about this a little bit. So for me, like probably in my early 20s, I really started down this route of understanding that some of the things that I believed weren't actually reality. And so you end up going through this whole rewiring process of recognizing that what you believe and what is true is not necessarily the same. And like it broke me for a couple of years. I didn't have like a mentor or a coach or anybody to support me through it. And I just like really lost touch with reality and just like really struggled in general. And it was just like so much that I didn't go back to it for quite a while. And I don't have like any underlying, you know, significant trauma, anything bad that's ever happened to me. It's just this whole like rewiring of the nervous system state can just give you like such hard wobbles, and it can be very hard to like recenter and ground yourself again. But it is a tool that I've found really useful, because a lot of these belief systems become your own imposed limiting beliefs that mean that you get stuck in life and you can't progress. So, you know, recently that came up for me when I first started the school was experience in high school where you know, I competed quite a lot as a kid, and I did very well because my mum had the money to spend it on me competing and having lessons. And so it meant that like in the town that I was in, I would win everything, and I'd come away with like championship ribbons and all of that kind of thing. And I went to school, and because it was a hack day as well, it's like you go in 10 classes and you come away with like a lot of ribbons and whatnot. And she's asked me how I went. I was like, well, I got first in this and first in that and champion in this. And I wasn't even like halfway in. And she's like, oh, stop showboating, like stop showing off. Like you know, I don't want to hear about you showing off about yourself. And so like that hit me in that nervous system state of it is not safe to be proud of myself and be proud of my achievements and the work that I've done. And I'm just going to keep that all to myself. And so that's like, you know, a lifetime of me like keeping myself out of the spotlight, not being seen by others. Like it's unsafe to be seen. It's unsafe to share my work and what I'm doing. And so like I really had to rework that process with, you know, stepping up a level and running such a big business, is that I needed to be very comfortable with advertising myself to advertise and promote the school. And so it's like as in from those adult eyes, like looking back at that experience and trying to find that safe place where I can be comfortable with being proud of the work that I do without like, you know, getting tripped up by your ego, like staying humble as well. It was, you know, it needed to happen for me to be able to continue in business. And if I hadn't have gone through that, I think that I would have created more and more hurdles and stumbling blocks in the way. And I don't think that I would be where I am right now without going back and going through that process of reframing and rewiring the nervous system there to have to recreate that thought structure and belief structure.
Yeah, 100%. Yes, absolutely. And what you did is like you really did create new neural pathways, right? Before,
yeah.
When your body felt that, it signaled one direction and it went into like, I shouldn't talk about this. It's not a safe place. All of those things that you mentioned that you got from one moment with your mother, you know, you carried for a lifetime in your body, right? And that was the neural pathway that just kept getting like laying the tracks down over and over again. But you did what so many people struggle to do is like laying down a new neural pathway, a new way to interpret that, a new way to see that. And it doesn't mean that those feelings don't sometimes come back. It just means that you now see an alternative way.
Yeah.
I don't know if those feelings ever truly go away. I mean, if yours has, please let me know. I know mine has not.
Yeah.
I still get so nervous because, you know, you have those voices that come in and tell you, you know, you shouldn't do this. Who are you to talk about this? Whatever it is that comes in your head, right?
Yeah.
And just continuing to lay down those new neuro tracks of saying, no, this is okay. This is safe. This is my reality now.
Yeah.
And not that old reality or what I thought was reality. I love the way that you put that though, because it's so powerful. Those beliefs that we really do hold, you know, hang our hat on because like a truth, when really it's so not a truth. It was never meant to be our truth, but we carry it like it is.
Yeah, so good. So that is, you know, some of the work that you are doing. And as you said, it's kind of like the magic that we don't really have a way of explaining, but we're starting to see like some research and some science and whatnot coming through with regards to how that's actually happening. And can you go a little bit more into your experience of your work with the vagus nerve?
Yeah, so it really started all on accident, completely on accident. I just happened to notice my main horse, Smokey, towards the end of his career when he was starting to get tired. He would, you know, I would have my horse leader in the beginning, you know, leading him the entire time, but he would know what I wanted by my breath before I would even be able to speak it to my leader. So Smokey would start to follow the direction, the correct direction from me, even though the words never came out of my mouth. And the leader would try to correct him. And I'm like, no, actually, Smokey's right. Like, I wanted to turn. We wanted to change direction. We wanted to do whatever. They were like, how are you guys doing this?
Yeah.
And I was like, how is he picking up on all of this? And so I just started looking at my breathing pattern as I was giving directions to Smokey. And it turned out whenever I would take a breath and do a sigh of an exhale, which is very simulating to the vagus nerve and the vagus tone, he would automatically, he's doing releases right now. I don't know if you can hear him, but he'll do a release and then he'll like change his direction or do whatever he's supposed to do next. And I'm like, this is astounding. Like this horse is literally reading my mind. I'm not even on his back. Like it's, you know, my body positioning has not changed at all. It was just a thought and a change in my respiration rate, which totally then took me on a different path. And as myself being a trauma survivor, I always was trying to figure out what is this calm that I have with the horses, right? Mm-hmm. Like I could feel it. I knew it was happening. You know, my husband would always say, you come home from the barn and you are so happy. You're like lit up. Which is why I think he never minded me having horses, right? Because
yeah.
He's like, oh, it makes Melissa happy. You know, that's good. And then I started finding the research on that cardiac coherency and all this cardiac just dependency and coupling that happens between the human and the horse when we surrender to it. The horse is always surrendered to it unless they're in a state of fear or anger. but a horse is always open for connection. It's humans that are not. We are yes. usually shut down for business, pretty closed. And a lot of that does have to do with that vagus nerve, depending on its tone in your body. Mm-hmm. And that's also where the stretching comes into play, because like you said, when you have tension, what's the first place you feel is in your shoulders, right? We all mm-hmm. clench up. We mm-hmm. all clench up. All of that is putting so much more pressure on that vagus nerve, right? So now it can't breathe. It's not getting the blood supply that it needs. We don't even know what a normal resting tone should feel like in our bodies sometimes. So by coupling that breath work for the vagus nerve with the stretching, surrounded by horses who have a much lower heart rate, right? So knowing that that horse's heart rate is usually around 40 beats per minute when they're out grazing, not in any stressful situation, we are surrounding ourselves with them. So now it is bringing our heart rates down while we are exploring these feelings in our bodies and truly getting reconnected with ourselves. And it is a very safe, peaceful place. And like I always explain to the groups, you know, the horses would let us know if something was happening. Mm-hmm. So if at any moment someone kind of has that alertness creep up in that peaceful moment, because sometimes being at peace is not easy.
Yes.
So, you know, we resist it sometimes.
Yes.
So if you get that, look to your right, look to your left, look at the horses. If their heads are down, there is no disturbance that's yeah. coming from you.
Yeah.
And again, go back into it and feel it and know that you are safe, because the horses will pick up on any disturbances that are, you know, that they perceive as a threat. And they will pick it up from so much further away, because their sensory systems, they live in a completely different world than we do. Their sensory system is picking up worlds that we don't do, that we just can't see, hear, or feel, but yeah. they do. So I say, listen, we can feel safe in their presence. They will let us know if something is unsafe. And if we look at the horse and we see the horse is calm, we can trust that because that horse is going to know if something is not calm, if there is something that we should be more alert to. And that helps people really feel safe with those feelings that come up, because again, we don't always feel safe in that body when those emotional signals kind of come to the surface. Yeah. But by having this amazingly kind, humble creature who is willing to partner with us in this way, show people it's okay. And usually in those moments, the horses will give a release at the same time as the person takes an exhale, because the horses always feel when our energy goes up and they will relax. It's just in those moments when we're making our own fear, the horse generally, if we aren't asking anything of them at that moment, they will let it go. They'll feel it, but they're still going to graze. They're not going to pick their head up because they're calm. They're in there. They're doing their natural thing. They're going to feel it. So they will still have a release, and you can almost always bet the horse will, you know, give out a big exhalation, will fart, you know, will have its, you know, vocalization, will roll, because they felt it, but it wasn't anything to be scared of.
Yeah. So good. The horse that I really learned this with, I didn't know what I was experiencing when I was going through this experience with him. My mom bought me a horse as my third horse as a teenager. She got him for quite a lot of money as like a show horse that I was going to compete on. And he was just rank when we got him. Like, we couldn't tie him up, couldn't touch his nose, couldn't touch his ears, couldn't catch him, couldn't give him a float. He was just, he'd like just panic and he'd be rearing and he'd be running away from me. And it took us about a year to get out to a first show, and then we got there and one of the people there was like, oh, I recognize that horse. It used to be on the rodeo circuit. It was like a really good bronco. I was like, oh wow, that must be why he's got such a good buck technique, where he gets me winded every single time he bucks me up. But it was with with him, it was like any fluctuation of emotional state, of like a heightened emotional state. So it's one thing to be scared, but I also couldn't be like excited or happy around him either, because that would send him off. And he had such a like long-term effect on my ability to upregulate my nervous system, that if people around me were excited, I was like, everybody needs to calm down. Like, we could be in a car in the middle of nowhere, and I'd be like, we're all about to fall off a horse. Like, you need to stop being so excited right now. And I learned a lot from him unconsciously of what to do with, like, quietening my nervous system, and how I could communicate to him with my breath. Like, you know, you can get a canter to halt transition purely with the way that you breathe out. You can get, you know, a walk to canter transition purely by the way that you breathe in. There's like all of these little subtle signals that you can get through just the way that you hold your body and the way that you breathe, that is able to effectively communicate to the horse. And I didn't actually realize that I knew all of this. I kind of did, because that's what how I train the breakers and that kind of thing. But it wasn't like when I started doing the breath work, I was like, oh shit, I know all of this already. Like, why am I needing to learn this again? It's like, it helps to have like that more scientific viewpoint of what's going on, and like a better explanation of it rather than just that experience. But it is so incredible, like how we can just tap into our body and communicate through just our nervous system and our breath, and the tone that we hold in our body and the relaxation that we hold in our body with the horses. I went down after I'd finished the class on Buteyko breathing and went in and experimented with the horses. And I was finding myself like, this one in particular, you have to be careful if you have panic attacks or anything, because it can trigger anxiety attacks and PTSD and that kind of thing. And I was finding myself like upregulating into anxiety and struggling to downregulate doing it. And so I'd be practicing it, and if like I was starting to get that tension, all the horses would come and they'd stand around me in like a protective circle and on alert. And then when I get down into that relaxation, they'd just disperse and they'd go back into grazing. And yeah. One of the horses that I have a really good relationship with, he like came over and he booped me like in the chest. And he was like, hey, don't forget, like, you're supposed to be experience this regulation of your nervous system from a place of love. It was like, just like switched me straight over into like that relaxation has the emotional connection aspect to it as well, where like the experience of love and relaxation is like so much better than just, you know, upregulating and down regulating the nervous system. And it was just like such an amazing experience for him to like just give me that little boop and like, oh, that's right, breathe, love. Yes. Everybody's happy.
They really are. I think they are just like nature's energy workers, because they really do gravitate to us when we need it most. That Arabian mare that I was speaking about earlier, last summer I had to have surgery to have a tumor removed, and I was very stressed out about it, and meanwhile I'm trying to like hold sessions and do everything, and this horse would not, you know, she would just come and stand right in front of me. I'm like, you know, I love you so much, but you need to go help other people right now. But she was like, Melissa, we got to take care of you too, you know. It was a very funny dynamic, and I would try to like get her to go. I'm like, listen, you got to go do work. And she was like, nope, I know you need me right here. I was like, all right, you know. And that was just so profound to me of like, okay, I really need to go talk with her and spend time with her before we go into sessions, because otherwise she's just going to be the entire time focused on me and not on, you know, who I would really like her to focus on. I mean, I appreciated it.
Yes.
But at that moment, I kind of needed her to pay attention to someone else.
Something that I've been reading about with regards to the vagal nerve branches, and the ventral vagal nerve comes up through the front of the chest. I think it is some of the nerves that have access to your heart, but it also innervates the expression on your face as well. And so it's like I consider it a lot with my like resting bitch face, is like, oh, your social engagement switch system is offline. Like you need to
Yes, I see what, yes.
Get down into that deeper state of relaxation and bring your friendly face back on online,
Yes,
so that
yes.
you're like approachable and able to connect with others.
Yeah, and honestly, it's not, you know, as soon as our face and our heart hit that, our entire body posture changes.
Yeah.
You know, if you have someone who is truly close to you and they see that transformation happening, they might say, like, all of a sudden, like, your face looks like you have a mask on, right? Like that resting bitch face. You might even slump your shoulders a little
Yes.
bit. Your entire body takes on a new persona.
Yeah.
All because of how that tone is within the nerve. And it's amazing when you think about it. And 9 times out of 10, we get stuck there again because we go into our heads.
Yes.
We think, okay, why am I feeling this? And then we end up beating ourselves up all, you know, we don't help it. Going into our heads is never the solution, but going into our body is really where that solution is. And doing that breath work is a nice foundation. But the key that they're now saying, I just heard Dr. Kennedy is this amazing trauma-informed therapist and neuroscientist. And he truly believes that the way that you heal that is by feeling it. And Dr. Levine, who is the founder of the Somatic Experiencing, he too, like he talks about, he was in a car accident and he made sure right after that car accident, he laid on the ground and felt every single emotion until it was done. He's like, because it was not getting stuck in my body. And that's exactly what happens though. We get it stuck. And then we don't, then we're afraid to feel it. And we think we can think it to go away, but you can't think it to go away. We've all tried and we keep trying and it's not working. If anything, we dig ourselves deeper into that hole.
And that's the challenge, right? Is that, you know, experiencing that place is so painful. It's like it takes your breath away kind of pain, and it's easier to deal with your pain by taking yourself away from it and trying to rationalize it and think your way through it. And I think that you probably need to have a really good support system around you to be able to, you know, really experience that pain in your body to allow it to shift. Is there, you know, like a situation where you're not going to properly process it, and then like you're trying to feel into it and it's, you're just going to kind of not be able to shift it and shift out of it?
I'm sure there is. Absolutely. There are going to be times where you just can't, right? Where you can't allow yourself to go there for whatever reason. Unfortunately, that does mean it will take longer when you revisit it, right? Because just like switching those neural pathways and laying down new tracks, the longer a track is there, the harder it is to go away, just like any bad habit would be. But there are times, especially in life, where we can't always feel it right away, or it might just not be the right time. I always say, like, when the time is right, you're going to be able to sit with it. And research says you need to be able to sit with that uncomfortable feeling for 30 seconds.
Right.
So 30 seconds is enough to show your nervous system that it's okay, we're going to let this out, and then you can start to recover. So whenever I get stuck in those moments, I think, okay, do I have 30 seconds right now or do I not? And within those 30 seconds, what needs to happen? Because truly, it doesn't take long, but it's those first couple seconds that are so insanely uncomfortable. But just also reminding myself, if I go into my head and say, okay, this 30 seconds, it's going to suck. Like, let's be honest. I'm going to cry. It's probably going to be ugly. I might scream. Who the heck knows what's going to come out? It's going to get ugly. But if that's going to save me so much discomfort from later on, because you're going to have discomfort one way or the other. Either you're going to deal with it now or you're going to hold on to it and then have to deal with it later because your body will keep nagging you that something is wrong until you finally listen. It will just keep going. You're gonna, you know, have these autoimmune problems coming up, skin rashes, dry eyes, like all these things. Your body is just gonna keep talking to you. And at a certain point, you have to be like, okay, I can't take any more medication. I can't take any more supplements. Something is going on, right? And it apparently is me. So let's get to what's actually happening. Research says 30 seconds. I have found that I tend to need more than 30 seconds. Because I think my first like 15 to 20 seconds is the fear of going into the emotion. Do I really want to do this? Like, am I leaning this way? And so it usually does take me longer and my recovery takes longer. But I'm slowly figuring out what's right for me. And I think that is what I always try to pass on to people is like, listen, research, people are going to tell you this is what normally should happen. And I say that with quotations, but all of our nervous systems are different. All of us are perceiving a world differently. So if your nervous system needs something different, it's totally okay. Don't judge yourself, meet it with kindness, and then do what you need to do. Just because an expert says something does not mean that that is true for you.
So good. I love it. So just to switch gears for a second, and to kind of come back into like horse riding as a skill and whatnot, with regard to these like neural pathways, one of the things that I try to do both with the horses that I have on training and with the students that I have on training is that if I can, get those neural pathways firing like to the best of my ability as perfectly as possible the first time around, then it means that we're going to be able to layer these new skills in without having to like revisit these foundations. So we spend quite a lot of time. I don't integrate my students into a group for 6 months, which is very rare in a riding school environment. And I spend a lot of time with them at the halt, getting them just to stand up and sit down with balance. From what I understand of my like limited knowledge is that it takes 6 to 8 weeks for these neural pathways to like really kind of consolidate and be sending those messages. So I try to like repeat the same exercise for about at least 2 months to 6 months if possible, because then we're starting to get some muscle conditioning and whatnot happening at the same time. You know, there's a little bit there where I like to do complementing exercises so that we're doing some cross training there so that we don't get like too stuck in that pathway. But especially if we're like, you know, for me, when I was learning leg yield, I expected to go from never having done leg yield before to being able to do a perfect competitive leg yield in one training session. And it's just like, it's not possible for the horse. Like they need to start developing that communication to their body before they can start developing the muscle tone to actually execute it. And then if we rush that process, that's where we're going to see these compensatory mechanisms where things aren't going smoothly and with balance anymore. And then we're developing crookedness in the horse. And that's really what's going to like plateau our ability to progress in our riding, is because like we've rushed through that process and now the movement that they're creating is no longer coordinated. So, you know, if you're not doing a coordinated leg yield and 20 meter circle, like how are you ever going to get to collection and shoulder in? And it's like, it's something that I see a lot with the other schools, is that they're so quick to put the riders into a group, they're not balanced, and so now they're learning how to ride defensively just to try and stay on the saddle or on the horse, instead of like learning how to coordinate their body effectively with balance so that they actually, you know, are going to progress when their body is ready to.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. And I have to say, I love that entire philosophy. And the amazing women that I work with and all of my friends that have been riders their entire lives, all have a great deal of pain and discomfort and body ailments. And I'm always like, I think you spent years riding against the movement, or like you said, kind of bracing in this in this fearful pattern.
Yeah.
Instead of really riding with the movement, because when you truly are coupled in the movement, it is so free flowing, and you are so moving with the horse as an entire unit. You are not working against the horse at all. That I can't imagine creating what I see in some of these young women. And I see it a lot, unfortunately, with even the younger crowd, the teenage girls who are competing day in and day out. And the body ailments that they're having are just insane for like, a 16-year-old to have the hip pain that some of them do. And I couldn't agree with that statement anymore. It's beautiful that you give them that much time. And I hope you don't get much pushback on that.
Oh, I get so much pushback.
Will you? Oh my gosh. I can, here in the States, there'd be an uproar, right? It would be like, oh my God, have you heard about Katie, what she's doing over there? But it's beautiful because you're truly teaching them to feel the movement, to connect with the horse. Like, isn't that what horsemanship is?
Yeah.
Right? That's what it is. And it's when you take away, all the fancy equipment and the matching saddle pads to outfits, and we take away all of that, it's about that connection with these horses. And you are giving those students such a beautiful gift of slowing down. Like, that can only happen if you slow down.
Yeah. You can't get the coordination and the body awareness trying to hang on.
No, not at all. You're just holding on for dear life. And,
just trying not to fall off.
Exactly. You're just, saying your hail Marys and going along for the ride.
Yeah. Which, has its place and is fun as well.
It does.
But it is helpful also to be able to, get into your body and make sure that everything's where it's supposed to be and doing what it needs to be doing. I'm finding that as I do it and I'm getting clearer on what's required and timeframes and whatnot and communicating those timeframes to students, I'm getting less pushback. Like, they're getting less frustrated with how long it takes. They understand the process better. They know that they're going to move forward and that they're going to move forward better. So I think, having that awareness of if we're going to do something new, it's going to be a good year before you're really executing it well with like good coordination, balance and strength, then there's less frustration in how long it can take. Because I know even for myself, like, I'd do it once and I'd be like, why wasn't it perfect? Like, I should have gotten it exactly spot on. There's something wrong with me, there's something wrong with my horse. It's like, no, this is all a process. And it's why I get really excited about functional movement, is that like, if we can do this now in the saddle, like, I'm hoping to make your life better because you're going to move better on the ground and like living in your life. I can hands down tell if somebody has got an injury, like, their body just won't go into that place that it's supposed to, like, not that it's supposed to be in, but that it would go in if there wasn't an injury. It'd be like, oh, your heel isn't, like, you're not getting your balance into your heel properly there. What's going on with that foot? Oh, I've got pins in my ankle. Like, oh, you're not getting a good rotation through that knee to get your leg in the right place. Oh, I had a bad injury playing football in my teens. It's like, these little things are going to come in that is going to limit the range of movement that we have in our body. And it's going to affect how tidy we are when we're riding, and how tidy we are when we're riding is going to affect how well the horse can work. So for those kinds of things, we need to slow down even more and get even more awareness into that functional movement of those limited and restricted joints.
Oh, 100%. And so many times what happens is, when somebody has like the pins in their ankle or anything like that, if that person hasn't taken the time to fully rehab that area appropriately off the horse, well, your job is going to be so much harder doing it on the horse. Because again, we don't like discomfort, right? Whether it's coming from an emotional feeling or a physical feeling, we all try to get away from it. And so a lot of times people forget, like, if you have an injury, it is going to translate to your horse when you are doing mounted work.
Yeah.
Because in that moment, you are coupling everything.
Yeah.
And so if you aren't moving well, your horse will not be moving well. They're going to be stiff if you're stiff.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So it's so, I love the message that you're giving those young girls. I wish you lived closer. I'd get my daughter signed up with you ASAP.
It is an interesting position to be put in as a coach. You know, like, I'm not a PT. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. Like, I don't have these skills, but you kind of need to have an awareness of the foundations of these skills if people are going to progress with their writing. Like, I definitely recommend that everybody seek the professional help and not, you know, rely on my limited understanding to support them through their processes. But, you know, as a coach, we think it's just, oh, how you ride a horse, but there's just so much of what we've experienced in our life that impacts how well we can perform and how well we can write. And same for horse, like, you know, when we're talking about the horse as an athlete, we have to like really get so drilled down into you know, nutrition and their living arrangements and their living conditions and the exercises that they're experiencing and the combination of exercises. If we like really want their peak performance, we have to get so drilled down into those specifics there to just, you know, elicit that little extra out of them.
Yeah. Absolutely. And just like humans, right? We have to make sure that we are getting all of that for ourselves as well to get that little extra out of what we need to do, and making sure that we are doing our part in that partnership to ensure that both of us are functioning to the best of our abilities.
Yeah, so true. Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. You've got a free mini course on getting grounded before working with your horses.
Yes, that'll be coming out in May. I'm going to do a quick webinar on it as well. And it's going to be completely free because I do believe that this is something that can really benefit people and horses, right? And I would love for people to just have easy access to some of these tips and techniques and why we do it. And so it's really important for me to have that as a starting block for people. And then they can take it and go whichever way they want, because there's so many different ways to get grounded. But it'll at least give a little bit of a taste of each different method that I've come across. And then if people want to explore more, they can. But it'll be completely free, and that'll be coming out in the first week of May.
So good. I am excited for that. I think I will be signing up as well. Oh, you've got your 4-week program, your 4-session program of finding peace in the paddock workshop.
Yeah, so I run those usually once a month, sometimes twice a month. Right now, just at one barn. I'm looking at a couple other facilities, and that's just a group. I keep the group small. It's 4 people. We meet once a week for about an hour and a half at a time. And that's truly going through meditation, trauma-informed stretch, all partnered with equine activities that I've kind of made up as I've gone along and seen what people connected with, so that people can reconnect with themselves and just become more grounded as they go about their daily life. And we ran a small case study on it last year, and it really did get statistical findings for bringing down people's anxiety and stress levels, which I was really excited about.
Yeah.
Just being a, you know, that research mind that I have doesn't stop, but I love just being able to show like, look, we did something, right? It's really always so nice.
So
we run that program. I just try to keep that mission of helping people and horses in the forefront of everything that I do.
So good. Absolutely love it. We're going to have all the links in the show notes to your website. You're most active on Instagram, so we'll have the link to that there and the link to your mini course. And so that workshop you can only do in person?
Finding Peace in the Paddock right now is only in person. Yes. I've been playing with it virtually. It's a little bit hard, but I don't think it's impossible. I'll just say that. I have it. I'm a very creative person. There might be a way. We're running something similar with some female veterans, but that one actually has a mental health professional in that course with us for those female veterans. And we've got some really nice results from that.
Yeah.
But the in-person really does seem to have that connection that I also really enjoy with the women, and sometimes men that show up. So we'll see how that goes. I'm working on that. How creative I can get, we'll see.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today and sharing your wealth of knowledge. Definitely jump over and follow on Instagram. There's some really beautiful, heartwarming videos there of the little kids that you're working with and the work that you do with the horses. And, you know, even just the advice that you share with how to work with the horses in this way is absolutely magic. I've definitely been stalking you for a little while now and knew that I really wanted to have you on the podcast so that we could delve into this further. Thanks for joining us.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me, Katie. This was really fun.
Thanks for joining us for our final episode of our conversation with Melissa from Melissa Jean PT. I hope you enjoyed listening to her as much as I enjoyed the conversation with her. Check out the links in the show notes to see what she's doing with her work that she shares on Instagram and how you can work with her in her program, Finding Peace in the Paddock. Until next time, happy trails. If you're loving what you're listening to on the podcast, you might be starting to recognize that trying to control your horse through submission-based training is the worst way to ask your horse to look after you. If you're working with or riding horses, you know how unpredictable and sometimes scary they can be. Unfortunately, most struggling horse riders make the mistake of thinking they can physically control their 400 plus kilo fur babies by moving their feet or spooking them into responding with flags and join up. Without giving your horse a reason to care about you and look after you, you will most likely end up with a horse that is disconnected at best, shut down or explosive at worst because they can't communicate their needs with you, especially if you are already scared, worried or nervous handling your horse. That's why we've created our new free online training experience, Building a Connection with Your Horse. This is how I've gone about creating safe horses for beginners, no matter the breed or previous handling experiences. If you want to learn the secret sauce behind developing safe horses that care about you and look after you without trauma-triggering training methods, register for our new training today at www.equestrianmovement.com/connection. And I will uncover the three big mistakes you might be making if you're trying to build a relationship with your horse and how you can start building your horse's trust and confidence in you as a leader worth following.